You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that sin. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
I'm Souther Teague.
And Greg's out of town, right?
Oh, no Greg today.
Yeah, right? Okay. He's missing that guy's voice.
I don't know where he's at, man. He's always doing something.
Well, you know, he's probably out drinking margarita, given the fact that today is National Margarita Day. Did you know that, Souther?
Well, I didn't know that, but is he out drinking a margarita, or is he being a good Catholic and celebrating Lent and maybe giving up cocktails because yesterday was, you know, Mardi Gras, Fat Tuesday? Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, you never know with that kids these days. Yeah, am I right?
He's all over.
But you know,
all over the map.
The funny thing is, it's like all these holidays are just starting to like kind of come back onto my radar, you know, in this era of COVID that we're in. I don't like it when people say post COVID, because it's clearly
not over,
and it won't be for a long time, I'm sure. Yeah. But the thing is, like, I'm glad that people are observing these fun little holidays. And, you know, National Margarita Day has always kind of perplexed me, being, you know, deep into February. I don't really think of it as a winter sipper, but maybe it's the counterpoint that they're trying to push by bringing some sunshine into the winter. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. But also, Mardi Gras, you know, like, it kind of sneaks up on me every year, even though that's something that has been kind of like always celebrated. It's, you know, it's a very historic occasion. You know, like, it, even though it's like always on my mind, it always sneaks up on me. I don't really like, I don't mark it in my calendar, or I don't have an alert for it or whatever, you know, it just like kind of sneaks up on me. And I'm like, oh shit, we got to make some hurricanes real quick, you know, or whatever. Like, they end up making a Sazerac just to like observe the holiday. So I definitely did that. I had a couple Sazeracs yesterday. And I haven't given up anything. So don't even ask.
Well, you know, you gave up on giving up.
Yeah, how about that? Exactly.
Just got to do that for 40 days and you'll
try
be
able to quit. But yeah.
I was fortunate enough to get one of the few and coveted seats at the first annual, the inaugural beefsteak dinner at Gage and Tolner last night, hosted by the venerable Dave Wondrich, and the sort of beer counterpart being Garrett Oliver from Brooklyn Brewing.
Yeah.
And, you know, these things have a storied history themselves. You know, their initial design was to be a place to, typically it was for politics, you know, raising money for your candidate or what have you, but then, you know, charities got involved, so you do a beefsteak dinner to raise money for charities, etc. But the gist is, everyone gets an apron when you arrive, so you're wearing this, you know, kind of goofy white apron. You get these little paper hats like you wear, you know, like they would wear it like car hops or whatever, kind of very similar to the paper hat I had to wear when I worked at the Waffle House.
Yeah, like a garrison cap, kind of.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it's called. You're right. And then all of the food, which is, as the name implies, a beefsteak dinner, is mostly meat. You don't get any cutlery. You just eat with your hands.
Yeah.
And it's just a real camaraderous time. And so we were drinking George Dickel and Brooklyn beers. And each table, there were seven tables, I believe. Each table had to get up and give a toast. And each table was to elect the toastmaster from their table. And of course, I got elected. Surely based on my glasses, somebody at the table, I didn't know these people at all, except for my friend who I brought with me, I brought Todd. They were like, the guy with the glasses, he's going up. So I had to go up. But of course, I was at table two. Who was at table one and of course got elected to go up was Philip Duff.
Oh,
man.
No.
With more gab and more toast in him than any person I know. So I had to follow the toughest act.
Yeah.
But I held my own, and I did raise the final bit of my toast was to Mardi Gras. So I finished up with Laissez le bon temps rouler, which of course means let the good times roll.
Nice. Very cool, man. Yeah. And for those of you unfamiliar with Philip Duff, you can look back through our archives of 500 episodes and find at least a couple of them starring Philip Duff. And, you know, I love having him on the show because we don't even have to talk at all.
No,
he just takes the,
yes, he does.
But you know,
the gift of gab, my boy.
Yeah, he's very good. I was fortunate enough to have dinner with him out here in Marin County, California,
right,
when he was out judging. He and Elaine, they were out here judging a spirits competition. So, but you know, I just want to touch on the beefsteak thing. You know, we hosted one at Frank, like in the backyard of Frankie's, like, God, 12 years ago or something like that. And, and it was so much fun. And, you know, you're wearing like, you're basically dressed like an In-N-Out employee, but you're like doing this, it's like, see, like this old school kind of fancy, like, but if there's like this kind of like raw cannibalism to it, like it's like a real high low left right, like I don't, it's whatever it is, it's crazy. And it's just, it's like a, it's a, you know, like it's one of those experiences that like makes you really appreciate fine cutlery, especially when you're like ripping meat apart with your hands and your teeth. But yeah, it's fun to do, so I'm glad you get to do that. That's really cool. We'll have to have Stitcher back on the show and talk about that as well.
Yeah, we should. In fact, he was there, of course, hosting the room, and it was really great. And then, you know, Amore Amargo wrapped up its 2-week residency, the Good Neighbors Tour at Death & Co. in Denver, which was a blast. So Sunday night was our last night of that. And speaking of Death & Co., here in the studio we have with us the former bar manager at Death & Co. Denver, Alex Jump. Alex, welcome to the virtual studio.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So stoked I ran into you in Denver and said, I want you on the show. So
yeah,
here you are.
Yeah, I'm glad I, you know, ran up and accosted you in the public market to say, how you doing?
Nice.
Yeah. Again, though, even when you came up, you're like, I saw the glasses from across the room.
Did,
these glasses,
you know what?
These glasses get a lot of mileage.
Well, you know, you've got to know, right? Like, you know that they do.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. They're the bait. They're the shiny bit of bait that I put out there for people to glom onto.
They're your bioluminescence. They're bioluminescence, basically. They are bright, you know.
Can't miss them. Yeah,
they are pretty bright. Yeah, so super stoked to run into you. Haven't seen you in a while, of course. Again, I feel like that's what I keep saying to everybody I see as the pandemic, you know, wanes. But really excited to see you for just that brief moment. And then I got to see you another time. You were hanging out doing some R&D in the Death & Co. space with, who was it? You're Evan, right?
Yeah, Evan. Well, yeah, we were, Evan is a bartender at Death & Co. He's amazing. And he just did his first bartending competition. He was in the Loose Style Solera Standouts. And me and Jake, the current head bartender at Death & Co. Denver, we went in to help him get prepared and kind of give him a taste of maybe what a presentation for a cocktail competition is like. So he's never done one, and kind of talk through what he was going to do. And he placed second. He got runner up this
That's great.
And so proud of him.
And what a cool category to, like, for your first cocktail competition.
I know, right?
Like a sherry competition. Wow.
I know. My first bartending competition was Steva Casey. She used to do these bartending competitions in Birmingham that were like sponsored by just like the brands that normally never do competitions. And so it was Malibu. It was a Malibu bartending competition. And I don't remember all the rules, but one of the rules was that something had to be on fire.
Yeah, I was at that event. I went to that event.
You were?
Yeah, absolutely. Rosser Lomax was in it. I remember you were in it.
Scott Steerwalt was in it.
Steerwalt won it, I think.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, of course. I mean, that man was made for the stage.
Yeah, on a mission.
So,
yeah,
I mean, they typically do a lot of flair competitions, right? Because, like, Malibu is, like, well, first of all, it's a plastic wrap bottle, so even if you drop it, it won't shatter everywhere. But so this was like a straight-up cocktail competition.
I feel like you've tested that theory.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it was called the Malibu Meltdown.
Yeah, that was the name. I was trying to think of the name,
yeah.
Yes.
But she's done a bunch. She did, like, a Midori one year. She did, Fireball 1 year. And it was like not really sponsored by the brand. I think maybe it was just like not even sponsored by the brand at all. She may have not even asked permission. I can't remember.
I think all these things were just an excuse to get together with Steva and have a party. And
100%.
I mean, I flew down just for that. So
Steva, if you're listening to this, please start doing them again.
Yeah. Yeah. Where have these things gone? Did the pandemic take them away? Maybe they need to be resurrected.
I agree. Yeah. But yeah, Sherry would have been a much more classy first competition.
Oh, man. I'm trying to think of what my first one was. Jesus. I think it was like 42 below vodka or something. Or something like that. Or I can't even remember. It's been so long. But yeah, I mean, God, I can't even imagine being like new to the industry, having some of the most incredible mentors kind of like taking you under the wing. But then also your first competition is Sherry. How cool is that? Yeah. But it also shows you how like far we've got, like gotten through, you know, it, where we're at in the industry today, you know, and with our cocktails and with the ingredients that we get to use. And they're just like kind of standard. Like if I would have had like all these different sherry when I started bartending, I would probably be a little bit intimidated, honestly, because it's a whole deep dive when you get into sherry and just fortified wines in general. But like, it must be, you know, I think about it a lot. Like if I'd gotten into bartending just right now today, I'd probably be, I'd be completely lost, to be honest. So kudos to him.
Yeah. Well, speaking of sherry though, it's a good segue, I think, because it's a bit on the low ABV side. Alex, your focus has moved from, you know, being the bar manager, you know, the storied Death & Co. Denver location to now operating, FOH, right? Which is
focus on house. Yeah. But everyone wants to stay in front of house. Yeah.
I was stumbling myself, even though it's right in front of me. I was looking at it and I'm trying to, you want to stay in front of house.
Well, we did it on.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I love it. It generates instant conversation at least.
Yeah. 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 My life has shifted a bit to the low ABV spectrum of the industry. It's been a pretty interesting last 6 months or so, moving out from working behind the bar. But Focus on Health, actually, I mean, we've been a company since March of 2020.
Yeah, I wonder what happened right about that time that might make us not be aware that you exist yet.
Yeah. To be fair, it was it was not reactionary per se to COVID, but certainly launched at the right time and gave me and LP, my business partner, a lot of time and opportunity to scream out onto the internet about what we were passionate about. And I think that really helped us in being, I don't know, recognized or heard, which was great.
Yeah. LP, who's Lauren Paler, she's been on the show in the past. And of course she took the first, coveted Drink Masters award from the new show that's on television. How did the two of you hook up? Because she lives in DC, you're living in Denver. How did this all come together?
Yeah, she and I have known each other for a while. You know how the industry goes. It's just like, oh, well, you know, we're acquaintances. We've been like in the same circles. We actually, we were both brand ambassadors for Belle Mead Bourbon in 2017. So it was the year that I moved to Denver, and they launched like a little brand ambassador program, and it was me and LP and Carly Hansen, used to be Gaskin, and some other cool people. So that's how I think LP and I really got to know each other, and then just stayed in touch, and had, like I said, just been acquaintances. And I came up with Focus on Health for the Most Imaginative Bartender competition. So I'd been posting about it online and kind of created this persona for the brand as I was pitching it to the judges for MIB. Mm-hmm. And when I got home to Denver after the competition, I hadn't won, but I did place and I won the part that was like the pitch for the brand, but I didn't win overall. Valentino won. So I didn't get the grant money to pursue like making the brand into a real business. So I was, just sitting in my car one day, getting ready to go into the bar, and LP asked if I had a second to chat. So she called me and she was like, well, I was watching what you were doing with MIB, with Focus on Health. Like, what are you going to do with this company? And I was like, I mean, I don't know. I have to like go work service tonight. I haven't thought about it. You know, I can't fathom I'll have the time to do anything with it. And she'd been through her own, you know, experiences in the industry, and through her own kind of personal, you know, experience of refocusing on her health and well-being, and you know, asked if I wanted to launch FOH as a company together. And I said, yeah, for sure. And she was actually supposed to fly to Denver so we could like sit down in a room and be like, okay, like what are our values? Like, do we align? Does this make sense? And then of course, you know, like weeks before her flight, it was like, oh, I don't know if you're going to make this. I don't know if you're going to make this trip. You know, we might have to postpone. And then of course we were just like, well, fuck it. Let's go.
Yeah. I mean, what I love about this, basically what you're telling me here is the MIB, Most Imaginative Bartender from, it's Bombay, right?
Yeah. Bombay.
So they, I didn't realize that this was part of the competition, is to sort of pitch a potential company. Is that how I'm reading this right?
So yes and no, it doesn't have to be a company. So the thing that is really cool about MIB, and they just wrapped up the competition like just a few weeks ago. And it was the first time they did it again since my year, which was early 2020. But they've changed the focus. It used to not be like this. And now they're working with Tales of the Cocktail. So there's a grant portion of the competition. And what they ask you in your initial entry is, what drives you creatively aside from bartending? And it was like that caveat of like, listen, like anyone can make a good cocktail. Like if you're here, you clearly can make a good cocktail. But we want to know like what makes you unique, what makes you you outside of bartending. And I actually, I almost didn't enter into the competition because I didn't feel like I had an answer to that question. I just like did a little bit of like looking inside of myself, and I realized that, you know, at that point in time, it would have been like, I'd been bartending for, I don't know, like 7, almost 8 years. I had like completely lost any personality trait that wasn't like Alex the bartender.
Right. I think this is common. I think it's a common thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was like, you know, it was like, I couldn't even say I had like read a book that like wasn't bartending related in probably like 5 years, like as embarrassing as that is. So yeah. I almost didn't enter, and a handful of my friends were like, listen, like you really should enter. And so, you know, I had in the years past, like been pretty vocal on social media about like my own experiences with mental health. And I tried to be like pretty honest about like, you know, it's not all like sunshine and roses just because I'm like managing this like world renowned bar. Like my life isn't perfect. And like, you know, sometimes it's great, but like today I went to therapy or, you know, like whatever. I just tried to be as honest as possible on social media. And I definitely had found that there was like a community of people that I felt like wanted to hear that or reciprocated it or like had messaged me being like, listen, I really appreciate you just like talking about what you're going through because it makes me feel not alone or whatever. And so, yeah, I really kind of took that as like an, you know, like you guys said, like it's pretty common for people to lose themselves to their career. And we work in a really cool one. Like everyone likes to eat and drink. Like you have something in common with like everyone in the world.
Right. Yeah.
And you know, like there's nowhere you can go and not still go to bars and restaurants. Right. So yeah, you just kind of.
I plan my vacations around them.
Exactly. Exactly. It's so, like.
But that's not just me working in the industry. That's like, I think a lot of people plan, you know, like based on what kind of food they like and what kind of wine, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's like, yeah, you like wake up years later, like, oh my God. Yeah. Like how, when was the last time I read a book? When was the last time I tried a new hobby or like whatever? So yeah, I just decided like, I'm going to turn this into a creative outlet. So yeah, when I entered MIB, I just said, you know, what's the point of me being here? And, you know, asserting that I'm the best at what I do. What's the point of me competing and being the best if it's going to kill me? And, you know, it was around that time that Rocky passed, and not to like give up my youth to show how young I am, but like when I first started bartending, was like 2012 or so. So it was like, just like through my time in the industry, I really had, I saw a lot of like beloved mentors in the industry pass away. Yeah. And I was really tired of, I don't know, there just being this circular thing of like, oh my gosh, like we didn't know they were struggling. We didn't know they needed help. We didn't know that they were sick. You know, we didn't know. And then, you know, kind of just like nothing else happening, nothing else being talked about.
Right.
No solutions being looked for. Nobody kind of questioning, well, what is it about this industry that is causing people to not be able to take care of themselves? How could we change the industry to make it so that people could have like lifelong healthy careers in this industry? Nobody kind of like asking those hard questions. So anyway, I'm sorry, I've been rambling. Anyway,
that's how radio works. That's how radio works. Yeah.
It's like particularly hard because they don't have the cameras on. So I can't tell if you guys are sitting there like eye rolling, like, oh my God, shut up.
No, definitely not.
But yeah, I don't know. So anyway, I decided to take MIB as an opportunity to be on stage and say like, hey, this is fucked up and we need to be talking about it. And we need to start working towards making changes so that, you know, the people we love, the mentors in this industry, don't keep dying. You know, and it's obviously not that simple. Like you can't just be like, oh, well, you know, anyway, I'm not trying to minimize.
No, of course not.
Like things like that. But
well, let's talk a little bit about them since we're right at this precipice. Let's talk a little bit about like, what is Focus on Health doing to curb these sort of issues?
That's a good question. So we, up until this year, we've mostly existed online, and a lot of the work that we've done has been like in collaboration with brands. Like early in COVID in 2020, we spent a lot of time online, like trying to just give people the time and the ability to share their knowledge. So that was a lot on social media. It was like a lot of hosting conversations with people. And a big thing for us is we recognize that we're not subject matter experts in a lot of these topics. Like we're not licensed clinical counselors. We're not mental health professionals. Like we're not, you know, personal trainers. We're not dietitians. So we spend a lot of time trying to align ourselves with people who are, so that they can start providing that information to our community. So that's what we did for like all of 20 and 21 was just online content creation. And then in 2022, we started, you know, everyone started doing in-person events again. And so we got to be present at Tales of the Cocktail and at Portland Cocktail Week, just providing some education and opportunities to be together. So we have a small team of people, and it's me and LP, and then we have Edie Burns, who works in New York and has MS, and she does event work for us and is amazing. And then we have Josh Gandy, who lives in Columbus, Ohio, and he is a sober industry professional. So he's actually launched a podcast. He's had it for, oh my gosh, like 3 years now, called No Proof, where he interviews other people that exist within the sobriety space in the food and beverage industry. So there's a lot of just like trying to help share people's stories and let people share their experiences, because I think there's a lot of power in just showing people that they're not alone, you know, like,
for sure.
You know, making people feel comfortable. Like if they want to explore sobriety in the industry, then like, you know, they're not the only ones and they're not weird for wanting to. And like, you can go to the No Proof podcast and listen to so many people tell their stories about sobriety in the industry.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, it even comes to mind immediately, Jack McGarry, Chaim Dowerman, famously Sam Malone, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, there are plenty of places to be in and behind a bar and not have a drink, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, there's definitely a lot of that, a lot of just sharing people's stories. But now in 2023, we're actually refocusing our company mission and what we're trying to do. So we are you know, without like sharing too much, because, you know, it's obviously not set in stone, but we're hoping to move into an area where we can work a little bit more in the public health space within our industry. So we've actually applied, we put in a letter of intent for the Tales of the Cocktail grant, and we're hoping to collaborate with the National Harm Reduction Coalition to develop like a food and beverage restaurant industry specific harm reduction and overdose prevention training that we can provide. That's a topic that's really important to me, harm reduction.
Yeah.
And then from there, we're going to hopefully develop more training programs like that, you know, centered around like exercise psychology and nutrition. And we'll work with Healthy Poor, Laura Louise Green to do mental health education and things like that.
I love it. And I'm very happy that you're out there doing this good work. Let's take a quick break and hear from our sponsors, but then I want to come back, Alex, and talk to you about Dim Light Hospitality and making that big leap without without a net, leaving the bar and starting your own thing. So we'll be right back with Alex Jump. Stay tuned.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
And we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. And in our studio today, we have Alex Shump coming in from Denver, Colorado, which is one of my favorite cities in the United States. Yeah. I've got a special, I actually have some special connection with it. My first motorcycle wreck of the two I've had was in Denver. And people think I'm crazy when I say that, but, you know, they were, it was a life-changing moment for me that really like opened my eyes to a lot of things. And it wasn't an accident of my fault. It was, I got hit by someone else.
How's it go?
Yeah. And, you know, as I'm sitting there, like in the emergency room, getting stitched up, and you know, the cops are there, and they're like, so what happened? And like, one of the things they asked, were you drinking? And I was like, no. It's like, this is what I do to keep myself from drinking, you know, a lot of times. So I was kind of thinking about what you're saying in the first half of the show, and like ways to kind of get yourself back into your hobbies that you had, like, and this is before I got into the industry too. And I know that you ride motorcycles too, correct?
I do. Yeah. I actually learned to ride May of 2020.
Oh, yeah. Fresh. You're fresh.
Cool. Yeah.
I got my first motorcycle for my 8th Christmas.
Oh my God.
Nice.
Yeah.
But it's to me, it's something I do. Cause I'm like, drinking and driving is the dumbest thing in the world. Especially if you want to be in this industry, as we're talking about before, there's a lot of ways that you can be in this industry without necessarily being behind the bar. Right. Working on, you know, focus on health, consulting, writing, radio, you know, there's a lot of things that you can do that are kind of just, they are directly associated with and influenced by and collaborative with the industry, but you don't necessarily, you know, but PR, for instance, you know, there's a bunch of different things. But to me, what we were talking about before, also about, you know, people who get into the industry, a lot of times, you know, historically it's been like, if you're a musician or actor or artist, or if you're in college, you know, and you're going through school and you need something to make money, it's a really great way to do it. Then people get so caught up in it. because it's really awesome, and the networking possibilities are great. But I like the idea of kind of focusing back on, you know, the hobbies that you maybe forgot that you had, or maybe hobbies that you didn't realize you wanted to have in the first place. I think the COVID definitely helped us with that a lot. You know, we all made our first, a lot of us made our first loaves of banana bread, during COVID, you know.
Well, and well, like sometimes those hobbies can actually like turn into like new passions that you didn't expect, which is like pretty cool too. I mean, I think that like what focused on health has been definitely like a long road for me. It wasn't something that, it definitely was never like a crystal clear, like, oh, this is what I'm going to do. And it probably started, you know, like it started as the fact that like, you know, I took my career as a bartender really seriously. And so like in February of 2019, I went to Tulsa to do a pop-up with Jared, who was bartending at the New York Death & Co. At the time. He and I went to Tulsa and we did a 2-day pop-up. And on the first day, we get behind the bar, you know, we're like getting ready to open the doors and it's going to be crazy and whatever. And so, you know, we're all like, oh, well, like, let's have a daiquiri shot. So we pour them and Jared's like, no, I'm good. And I was like, oh, okay. Weird. And, you know, like at that point in time, like I really wasn't drinking that much behind the bar, but I'd maybe have like a shot of dry vermouth or something if somebody wanted to have a shot with me. But you know, at pop-ups, it was like a little different, you know, like you like to let your hair down and have fun. So the next morning he and I, like I got up and I went to yoga and then he and I were like walking to have breakfast. We were just like talking about our careers and everything. And he just said something to me that like really stuck and it really stuck with me and changed my perspective on my career. And, you know, we were talking about how he didn't have anything to drink behind the bar. And he was like, listen, like, I want to be like, I'm here to be the best. Like, I want to be one of the best bartenders. And like, how am I going to do that if I'm drinking behind the bar? And that, like, I really heard that. It was, I think I needed to hear it. And it changed a lot of things for me. So from then on, I just stopped drinking behind the bar and pretty much at work in general, unless it was like, you know, when you're doing your manager closing duties and having a wine or whatever. But I just quit drinking behind the bar. And I really tried to like set that example for my staff in Denver. And I feel like that actually did make a difference for a while, especially when I was working behind the bar with them. So, you know, then that became, well, first of all, like management is both a blessing and a curse. And so it's like, you're probably not going out drinking with the staff after work, because first of all, you're like recounting the money because it's $4 off or whatever at 4 a.m.
Right.
You are gifted for better or worse with this like distinction between you and the staff, ideally, you know, if you're going to be an effective manager. So then it was like, well, I'm not drinking at work anymore. I'm not going out to staff. I'm going to get up and go to the gym, you know? And then it was like a few years later, it was like, oh, I recognize that if I don't go to the gym, then I'm not a very happy person. So like, I know I need to. Mm-hmm. And then that became like, I bet a lot of other people would probably feel that way too, if they gave themselves the chance. And then that eventually became this idea for Focus on Health. And then it still took, you know, 2.5 years of Focus on Health existing for me to be like, oh, maybe I could actually like leave my job and be able to put all of my effort into Focus on Health. But it took a really long time for me to be okay with that decision and be confident that I would be able to make money and pay my rent and feed myself and stay relevant, because that's like, you know, weird fucked up thing with this industry too. Wanting to feel relevant. And I spent a lot of hours talking to my therapist about that. I'll just, you know, no shame. It took a lot of time to realize that that could be something that I could do. So yeah, you know, in short, sometimes your hobbies or things you devote time to outside of work can inadvertently become something you want to, you know, turn into work. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm a great, I don't know if I'm great. I'm an example of that. You know, I had a passing interest in, Well, I don't know about this example, but I had a passing interest in bitters that became, more of a, again, sort of a hobby, that then suddenly became an obsession that then became, a job and has then become a career, you know, right. That was just me being like, what are these little bottles, you know, and it blossomed into that. I want to talk to you though, a little bit about your other, endeavor, Dim Light Hospitality, which, by the way, which came first, Focus on Health or Dim Light, or do they arrive together?
Focus on Health. Yeah. Dim Lights, you know, I wanted to get into consulting work, and I had like opportunities here and there that I'd like put in bids, like I'd pitched for consulting work, but I'd never gotten any, because, you know, like I was pretty firm and like, this is my price and, you know, like wasn't hired, which I have no regrets about. I'd wanted to get into consulting, and I felt for me, like it's Focus on Health is the business that I see myself doing long-term, but consulting work is the way that I feel like I can finance doing Focus on Health until Focus on Health is like a profitable business, you know? So it was like, I know I'm good at writing cocktails. Like, I know I'm good at training staff. I know I'm good at picking out glassware and writing opening and closing manuals and whatever. I already know I can do that. So why not try to do that plus Focus on Health, and make a go of it. So, Focus on Health came first, and then, Dim Lights, kind of was the impetus for me being able to leave my job.
And I assume you landed a few jobs prior to pulling the trigger to leave your position at Death & Co, right?
Nope.
No. You just built a beautiful website and said, fuck it, I'm jumping.
Yeah.
I'm going to jump.
Yeah. I definitely wanted to announce that I was doing consulting work before leaving my job. I wanted to have work secured because I thought that would make me feel like, you know, then I wanted to dip my toe in first so that I could like be confident that there would be work for me. And it just didn't shake out that way. I also like, you know, I really took advantage of like being gainfully unemployed when I quit my job. So like I spent some time, overseas. I actually, when you texted me the other day, so there it was like the text message above was from when I was in Portugal, and you were, I don't know, I think you were like, hey, congrats on quitting your job or whatever. And I was like, thanks, I'm at the pool in Portugal.
Yeah, that's right. You were, yeah.
So, I really took some time off. And so when I got back, then I built my website and kind of started pushing it. And so, I didn't have work secured. We had been working with doing stuff with FOH, and we were kind of trying to figure out how to get more stuff going with that. And, but a lot of stuff kind of fell in place after I quit my job. I kind of just had to trust the universe that it would work out. So funny enough, so we just got to announce, a couple of weeks ago that, that myself, Lauren Paler, and Charles Jolie are all part of the Williams-Sonoma Chefs Collective for this year, which is super cool. But like weirdly enough, in the weird ways that the universe works, on my last day at Death & Co, we like, you know, wrapped up the day. I wasn't there very late. I did like an admin shift and, hung out with the staff for a little bit. And then I was driving home, and it was kind of like, you know, one of those things where I was like, what the fuck did I just do? Like, oh my God, how am I going to survive? And then I got this phone call from Kristen with Williams-Sonoma, literally on my drive home from my last day at work. And she asked me if I wanted to be part of the Chefs Collective. And I was like, whoa, like, all right. Like, it's going to be okay. Like, things are going to, like, you know, you just need to trust that it's going to work out. Obviously, you can't just be like, I'm going to quit my job and be like, I trust you, universe, and like wait for shit to come your way. But it was just like, it was just a cool moment to be like, oh, no, like, there's stuff out there. Like, you just need to be like looking for it and putting your name out there. So,
and receptive to it when it comes, you know?
Totally. Yeah.
I know that one of the things you wanted to talk about, which actually it's kind of perfect time for this. You wanted to talk about work-life balance. But I always say it's life-work balance because life should come first. How has that been in this transition into your own business? Have you been able to like get in touch with your, like the things that you like to do outside of the bar world?
Yeah, maybe a little bit too much. it's definitely been hard. It's learning a new way of operating because I don't have a place I have to go to. It's normally, you know, like my office in my house where I'm sitting right now. And there's, you know, cute dogs in my house that like want to go on walks. And there, you know, in the summer there's motorcycle rides. You know, life. I mean, I quit my job because I needed a little bit more time to just have my life. And so I decided like, yeah, let's see if I can work for myself and make it happen. Like, you know, and it actually took a little bit of like accepting like that it's not selfish of me to want to do that, you know, because there's, right. you know, we all have that hospitality thing in us where we're very committed to our team and our employees and our bosses. And so, you know, I had a little bit of like, listen, like you're actually allowed to be selfish and want to do that if that's what you want to do. At first it was really hard to kind of be strict with myself. And now it's a little bit of the opposite where, you know, like I'm trying to learn how to not overschedule my days and, you know, spread shit out. But also like, you know, my parents live in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and it's 2 hours from Nashville. And a couple weeks ago, they were like, hey, we got a box at the Predators. Do you guys want to come to Nashville for the weekend? And we were like, yeah, because we can, you know, yeah. like absolutely. So there's that flexibility too, which is what I really wanted. And so I've been really, really appreciative and not taking for granted.
Totally. I think there's a huge difference between maybe not huge, but there is a difference between doing something for a living and doing something for living, you know, or living yeah. to do the thing. You know, when Dave Wondrich, one time when he was guest bartending at Grand Army, he was like, it was after the show, but you know, it's pre-pandemic. Mm-hmm. We would have guests on the show in the studio at Roberta's in Bushwick. And then we would have like a happy hour where the guests would come and like, if, say they're an author, they would sign books. You know, if they were a bar owner, they would maybe jump behind the bar. Or if it was a brand, we would do a special feature and like, you know, like, things like that. It always like tied back. And he's like, Damon, he's like, I'm going to do this. He's like, I'm going to get behind the bar and I'm going to make drinks because I want to. And he's like, and I'm going to do it until I don't want to do it anymore because you can't make me. And he just laughed maniacally. And that was the theme of the night. He was just like, yeah, Damon, I'm going to make some more drinks for a while, but then I'm going to stop when I want to because you can't make me. And I was like, all right. I love that, man. I love that man, and I love that comma, man. But yeah, it's like, you know, I think there's something to be said about this episode is like, don't let it overwhelm you. Like let passion drive you and don't let, you know, like being your own boss, you know, and understanding how to do that and also taking care of yourself so you can do that. So, I mean, I think it's been a really great episode having you on to mm-hmm. talk about all this. I mean, like we've been talking a lot over the past few years about like low and no ABV and like that life work balance and especially about health in the hospitality industry. Yeah. And so this has been really great to have you on.
I mean, I'll say like, you know, I do feel really fortunate that I get to work for myself. But I believe that it's possible for a lot of people. I think you just need to know what you're good at and you need to be willing to say that out loud. Like you have to promote yourself and that is really uncomfortable for a lot of people. Right. You know, but right now, like the consulting work that I have, I've gotten through word of mouth. I've gotten because somebody said my name in a room where it needed to be said. And I'm really grateful for that. You know, but it's also like, you know, shamelessly going on LinkedIn and being like, I made a website, you know, which like feel, you know, cringe, but like, you know, being willing to be like, look, I did this and I'm doing this thing. And, you know, like even when I was getting ready to leave my job, you know, my partner was like, you just need to say you're a consultant. And I was like, but I'm not, I've never done any consulting work. And he was like, you just need to say that. And I was like, like, it was hard for me to like wrap my head around that, because it's like, it's not lying. Like, I'm fully qualified to do consulting work. Have I done it? No. Will I do it? Hopefully. But you know, it's like,
absolutely, yes. It's an absolute totally. Yes. You will do it.
Totally.
You know, so yeah. It was like, you just need to say you're a consultant, like, and consulting work will come. And so,
The best part of that too, is that in this industry, this wonderful industry that we're in, if you land a consulting job and there's a piece of it that you don't know or unfamiliar with or unsure of, you can lean on people in the industry and say, hey, have you ever built a spreadsheet for, you know, like blah, 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 or what, you know, whatever it might be. It's like, there's, yeah. You have a huge, one of the greatest support systems in the world, you know? And
I wanted to share that. Like, I'm part of like two different like groups of consulting people who like, we all have our own specialties and we're kind of like just like a little group. So, you know, if somebody comes to this one person and is like, hey, I want to open a bar. It's like, well, there's me who does beverage, you know, somebody else who specializes in like culinary, and somebody who specializes in, you know, operations and spreadsheets and, you know, all of that. And so it's like, great. Like, do you want all of us? Oh, you only want beverage? Here's Alex, you know? So like, that's been really cool
to connect with
other people who have other specialties to like build a like stronger consultancy group too. So.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell you this, to kind of back up what your partner said. I went on Vistaprint.com in like 2007. I had just moved to New York City. I didn't know shit. I mean, I knew all the classics. I knew a lot of the classics, you know, and like, you know, I was just like, I had just started bartending like a year and a half before I moved from Oklahoma City to New York. And I just went on Vistaprint.com, made a very simple business card that said bartender consultant with my information on there. And I just went out like with what little money I had. I popped around to some of the places that I really liked. I would have a quick drink or a bite or whatever. You know, I wouldn't like blow it up or anything because I didn't have the money to. But I would just like, your presence is important. The visibility, I think, is kind of what you're... To kind of add on to what you're saying, visibility is something. And, you know, with Jared, especially, you know, I was talking with him because he and I used to work together back in the day. You know, one thing about a lot of bartenders that it's a piece of information that we kind of talked about, it's like, people got to know where to find you, you know, like don't hop around to the next new cocktail bar. There's a lot of people, especially in New York City. Every time something new opens, you know, they'll spend 3 months at this place and go to another place for 4 months. And it's like, people don't know how to track you down. And that's not just for people to hire you as a consultant or, you know, it's, you got to build your crowd first of all, but then to hire you as a consultant. But then like, if someone wants to write an article about a cocktail of yours, like then they can't find you, you know, press is like a really important part of backing up whatever you're going to do as a consultant, because people got to see the proof, right? So I don't know, it's like, you know, I think there's a lot of good information that has come from this show. I can't wait to come back to Denver. I'll rent a Harley from like Eagle Rider and we can go hit the road, but also we can get like the other Denver people, Sean Kenyon, I know rides.
Well, I was going to say, you know, we can sidebar later, but you know, there's the ride details every
year. Right, exactly.
So, I've been envious of that every year since it's been going on.
Yeah. And we can talk shop then too, but unfortunately we're out of time, but this has been a great full hour of conversation with you, Alex. And it's really nice to catch up with you and see what you're doing now. The website, for everyone out there, it's Dim Lights, Dim Lights Hospitality, as in like the song Dim Lights, Thick Smoke and Loud, Loud Music. I imagine.
That's right.
I play in a country band. I'm very familiar with that one. And then as far as the focus on health, it's fohealth.org. And and Alex Jump, it's AXL Jump, like Axel Jump. On social handles. So yeah, that's where you can find her. I'm sure that Alex would love to chat with anyone who is looking for any of this information or needs to kind of find that balance in their lives and in maybe a new direction. Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Thanks for having me. guys. Yeah. This has been a really great way to start my morning.
Yeah, so great to have you on.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
So glad I ran into you in Denver.
You know, that's how it works. That's how this works. You know, that's just another testament to the power of this industry and the friendships. So, all right. Well, that's it for the Speakeasy this week. Check out Heritage Radio Network for many more programs like this one. And until next week, y'all, cheers.
Cheers, everybody. So you don't shun
the devil with your rock. The Speakeasy is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food and drink radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.